The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I'm tired. It's time for bed, and somebody please give me a sandwich.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 36 for the week of June 30th, 2014. I am Rhodes Scholar David T. Cole, and I'm here with active volcano Sarah D. Bunting.
All the times to go dormant.
Rescue kayaker Tara Ariano.
I promise it's totally safe.
And the challenge doctor Lilith Marcus.
I am never seen.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Extra Hot Great. Today's lead topic is MTV's The Challenge, free agents.
Well,
can somebody explain the free agents part of this?
First, let's welcome our special guest and challenge expert, Lilith Marcus. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
And I hope everyone else packed a lunch. Just the roids and coke section of this conversation, 90 minutes.
Okay, so explain for those of us, me and Dave, who are not challenge conversant, there's a different theme or premise or gimmick every season, is that correct?
No, there are like four or five, and then they just keep running through them.
Okay.
But this is the first time they've ever done free agents as the theme.
Oh, did they actually do free agents? Because
I mean, that was going to be my next question. Because it seemed like there were a lot of episodes where people were teamed up.
Right, but the problem is they keep casting like 50 people to be on this show, and then you only have 12 episodes, so it occurred to them, hey, having them compete individually might not actually work. So they keep pairing them up in these arbitrary configurations in order to create drama.
So I have some questions that go even further back than these questions, which are...
we'll get to a substantive discussion of the show soon enough, but first,
why would we
the
do
newbies.
That?
Okay, the challenge... used to be called the Road Rules Real World Challenge, yes?
The Real World Road Rules Challenge, yes.
Okay, and Road Rules hasn't been on the air for, like,
since
can we measure
was
in decades?
Boy.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
It's been, like,
it's
15
been
years
time.
Or something?
Yeah, it's been,
something
like, 1.3 decades. I think that's right.
So is anybody from the show actually from Road Rules still?
Not this season, but there have been a few recent ones, yeah. Like, Mark Long keeps doing this show.
At a certain point, the last guy from Road Rules is going to die.
Yeah, it's like the last dodo bird. Like, they're all just standing around staring at it, waiting for it to die.
But we still have Real World. So eventually, this show is just going to be past Real World people
Or the fresh meat people.
Yeah,
so
they
do
like
this
grow their own skin grafts for it, basically by being like, we need some new blood for this show. And then they pair them up with veterans, which don't get me started on the veteran designation. Like, leave the armed forces out of this, please.
All right,
you're running around inside a plastic ball. But anyway, that's how they get new people on the show now.
Oh, and they did a fake Road Rules season. That was called
just
like Viewer's Revenge.
This.
Yeah, and it was purely to get people to be on the show.
Wow.
And it lasted like 5 weeks.
So my question is, would you expect anybody to truly enjoy this TV show who hasn't watched the shows from which the participants are from and have like a connection with them? Because this show was just like, it was just some dudes climbing a mountain and riding a bike.
Right, well, but they're people that you've hated from before.
That's what I'm asking. Yeah. I'm asking is how much of this show's what you're getting out of it is because of like who is on it. It's not the format. It's the watching people suffer that you want to suffer.
Well, also, you have to keep in mind, I haven't watched The Real World in forever. I don't know who any of these idiots are before they go on the show. I just assume that I hate them, and I'm right. Yeah. So you should just work on that as your operating principle.
Okay.
And then,
yes, I should add that Lilit did our challenge coverage on previously.tv quite capably, except for her under-hating of Jessica. In my opinion, it's not my opinion, it's fact. She's horrible. But that's because I watched Real World Portland and wrote it up every week. And so I feel many large, fiery feels about Jessica and Naya et al.
And in contrast, I haven't seen season one. So with that, I just want to excuse myself from this conversation.
Well, for someone like you who does not watch reality television for any sort of drama or, like, you know, hoping for some kind of cosmic justice that you never get, it's not for you, Dave.
Okay, well, I'll see you later, guys.
This is where I wish we had a video podcast so we could see Dave, like, doing the fake going down the stairs move. Anyway,
getting in the TARDIS that's in your office.
Exactly. So what did you guys think of this season as knowledgeable challenge watchers?
It wasn't free agents. I was so excited about the idea of all these people beating the hell out of each other. And then
there are people who I hate who thrive in this environment because they are veterans and they have managed to, like, leverage the fucked up, pathetic, loyalty-based strategy that these challenges involve to get to wins for their team or their pairing or whoever. And free agents meant that someone like Bananas would just be a free radical who sucks and has won enough money and needs to go and learn to type and get a real job. But it didn't turn out
and a haircut.
Way.
Oh, so many haircuts.
Oh, the haircuts.
Just a week of haircuts.
And maybe, like, stop wearing a banana suit when you're a grown up. I don't know.
Well, I don't know about that.
I mean, at least it hit his hair, right?
Yes.
He did cut it, though, for the reunion, but it still looked... I mean, what was that greasy
mess? Thought it looked like church lady hair. I said as much. That's what it looked like. It started flipping up at the bottom, doing, like, the church lady thing. I wanted to put pearls on him.
Yeah, it's not good.
On the spine.
Yeah, but this season did have some... I don't know. Like, sometimes it was very dull, and then other times it was really exciting, and... I don't know. I thought it was okay, but I'm just a little... I did enjoy that TJ Lavin, who was the host, removed his customary slightly sideways hat, which seems to have been... there must have been some sort of, like, Samson and Delilah relationship with his snark power, that once he removed the hat, he started being much ruder to them and much more the voice of the audience. Would you agree?
I think also it had to do with, like, not dying. So he was in this really, really awful accident and, like, was in a coma for a while. And then when he got better, he started doing the show again. And it's clearly a man who gives no fucks about anything. Like, he's seen the other side, and now he knows that it's not worth trifling with these idiots.
But it was very much a Tony Soprano progression, where at first, after Tony got shot, he was like, every day is a gift. And then after a while, he's like, does the gift always have to be socks? Like, for a couple seasons, TJ was like... Well, you know, you tried and it's cool and I can't really get too angry or I'm going to pop one of the staples in my head. But now he's better and he's over it again.
Yeah. And he hates all the same people I hate. So it was really entertaining merely from that perspective. Like, he hates Bananas and he's super open about it. And I like that.
And he seems to think, and I agree, that something is wrong with Laurel where she can't quite be held responsible for whatever rude.
I'm over that meme where everybody thinks she's a robot. That's just one of those things that you say when, like, a woman does really well at something and doesn't cry in every episode. I mean, she cried in a lot of episodes, but not every episode.
But I think there is something emotionally...
She's on that show!
Well, no, but not in the same way. Like, I think she might have some developmental challenge or spectrum position. Hmm. Whatever. I'm never going to hang out with her, I don't care, but...
Yeah, I mean, I would love to go through and just clinically diagnose everyone on the show with what, like, I think is wrong with them. And short answer, the answer is steroids. Like, or 9 times out of 10.
Allegedly.
Cocaine. Like, there's a reason that they go to South America. Sorry, South America. I don't... Like, they could send them to the Yukon, but...
Like, did you understand Teresa whenever she talked about anything? Because I didn't. Or, like, Camilla? I don't know what they're doing there.
Well, Camilla is there to get drunk and start fights, and Teresa probably ditto. The reason I can't understand her is that Michigander accent is so thick that... All the vowels turn into the same thing.
I like that Camila, because it's 1L, Camila, has the same name as Juan Pablo's daughter.
That's right.
Camila.
Coincidence?
Dun, dun, dun.
I don't think so. Wow, Tara runs the board. All right. Good job,
No,
Tara.
That was Dave. I would just like to add a couple of notes from my watching of the finale, which I've been one other episode a long time ago. It was the only one I saw. I was mad at how much I identified with Devin, thinking every part of it was bullshit, because that would be me. But I also wouldn't go on that show for exactly that reason. And also, the part where they had to go on the spin bikes for like an hour and a half.
Oh, it was more than that.
It hurt my soul. What I said to Dave when that was happening was, oh my God, they just have to sit there. They can't listen to a podcast or anything. Just be alone with their thoughts pedaling. That is like torture to me. I can't be alone with my thoughts from like my desk to the bathroom. So that would be very, 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 very difficult for me.
And worse, you were there with Bananas' thoughts.
Well, at least he left. Like, he was the first
all
one
two
done.
Of them. Yeah, true.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So at least he was like, peace. You're like, good. But then poor Nani for forever sitting on that bike, wishing she was dead.
True. Now, Tara, did you watch the reunion as well?
Right.
No.
Okay. You two take a break. Dave, take another break.
Okay.
What did you think of the Bananas versus Jordan dust up at the reunion?
Okay, I've a complicated thought on this. So I think that Jordan may actually be secretly a genius and the smartest person on this show. I think
Agreed.
He's setting himself
Continue.
Up for a future exes season with Laurel where he will win, or a future rivals season with Bananas where he will also win.
I'm with that. I agree. I mean, here's what I don't understand. Like, Jordan, all right, that was a stupid, like, the baller move of him, like, flipping over all the kill cards, whatever. That's Jordan. Like, he was on Real World Portland. He was one of the few I didn't totally hate. Bananas is right that he's trying to prove things he doesn't need to prove. But Bananas telling anyone else how to run their lives is ridiculous. And also, it obviously bugs the shit out of Bananas, so it's working.
Right, like, I would watch it just for that.
Part of what he's trying to prove is that you have no sense of humor about your challenge veteran status. Like, job done.
Right, and they also screwed Jordan by giving him the wall for that elimination. The only one where, hey, the fact that the guy doesn't have a second hand is kind of bullshit.
Yeah. Do you think that was a production?
I think everything
that
was production.
Purposeful on production's yes. part that they're like, he'll just
so
destroy
many,
Bananas.
Okay.
My favorite thing is,
like, what's another
say,
one?
I love all of your conspiracy theories across all of reality TV, by the way. That's for the listener's benefit, not just this show or franchise.
Oh, that's because of the Gretchen and Slade thing, isn't it?
Yes.
It's totally true. It's not even a theory. It's so true. right. So I think that production had a lot of hands in this. I mean, okay, there was the episode where they were down one guy because they sent Frank home because he was sick. And then the men's elimination, it was going to be Johnny Riley versus Jordan, the two closest friends. Oh my God, so dramatic. And then it ends up that the one card nobody picks is supposed to be the kill card, but we never see it. Lies.
Yeah.
There was no kill card.
Well, and also they realized, like, we're quickly running out of people that anyone likes.
Yeah, and they needed to keep their numbers. Yeah. They already had somebody slotted to leave that episode and someone already left. What was the incentive for them?
And they've done a thing before where they did send a girl home to even it up, and there was a huge, well, whatever, a hue and a cry.
Right.
Singular from the internet. But I don't know. Like, the people on our forums really seem to believe that Johnny Bananas is a loyal friend and...
And that, like, in real life,
blind
he's some
puppies
awesome
cross
person.
The street. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe.
I watched this show. That's the one I see. And, like, if this is what you choose to be your persona, if you're just such an amazing person in real life, but you choose this douchebag persona to be on TV, what does that say about you anyway? Like, they kept telling me Omarosa was a scam, too.
Well, yeah. Like, this is how you make a living, is this persona. And then he's complaining about how after taxes, he's not going to have that much money.
Tiny
left.
Violin, Bananas. Tiny violin.
Yes.
How many challenges has he been in at this point, counting this
he's
one?
He's won 5. I don't know how many
what?
He's been in. Yeah, I know. It's disgusting.
Come on. At a certain point, they have to retire him, don't they?
You'd I think don't... so? They got rid also... of his two assaulty friends. Am I allowed to slander people? It's true, right?
Well,
there was a court case, so they were accused, at least. We can say that. Yeah. That much is a fact.
So they are not on the show anymore. They are gone, at least.
Right.
So.
Yeah, although the production's first move, I believe, was to ban Tanya
right.
Lifetime.
And then to slut-shame her in the media.
Yeah.
But isn't Bananas like my age? Like, shouldn't he be doing something more dignified, as Sarah suggested?
What are you going to do when your name is Johnny Bananas?
I'm of two minds about that. Like, as long as he's able to do this, why not confine him from the rest of the working world? And as he admitted on the reunion, he has not had another job besides this since college.
Wow.
Do you want to train that guy on the t-shirt cardboard at the Gap? I don't.
Who says, hello, Mr. Bananas at work?
Yeah.
Monkeys.
If only.
Yeah.
I mean, he tried to get that sweet lawsuit money from when he sued Entourage, but that didn't work.
So, oh my God, I always forget about that.
Oh, I never forget about that.
Christ, why? But yes, Tara, and to answer your question, he is, I think, in his mid-30s.
Yeah, okay. I think so.
So not quite my age, but still getting up there.
Compared to these people, Boone and Murray world. He's like 105.
Yeah. It's just, I guess at a certain, I don't know. I don't know what else he could do. You're right. But at the same time, it's like, at a certain point, aren't you going to get embarrassed to show up there again? It's like the old guy that's still dating high schools.
Yeah. Well, and you know what point is also not, you'd think it would be that point where they're like, I can't do this anymore, but it isn't. Having a kid.
Yeah.
That's true.
Paula
that's true.
Will be back.
It's just a matter of time. I thought Robin would be back, though, and she has not come back since having a kid.
No, she has.
Really?
Like twice. Oh, yeah.
Oh, wait, was she on? Was that
her
after
kid is
she
like 12 now. Yeah, yeah.
No,
it was.
We're going to have to go back and check the tape. I don't remember any of this.
I mean, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure I said aloud and in several tweets with increasing levels of caps lockitude, why are you here? You have a child.
I mean, if there was caps lock involved.
I'm pretty confident. That's all I'm saying. I'm like bananas confident. I'm not quite Jordan confident. I'm bananas confident.
Well, Cara Maria is child free, so that means she's coming back forever.
Okay. Fair enough.
Have they announced when the next challenge is going to be or who will be on it? Was that part of the reunion?
No, but there's a lot of speculation. The word is that it's going to be another season of exes.
Okay.
And that Dustin and Jessica are going to be on it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when it's like semi-annual now, right? So it's like January and July usually, or whatever, January and...
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that. All right.
So maybe in the new year.
Yeah.
They'll have to advertise it really heavily during the next season of Teen Mom. So we'll know soon.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I'll know soon and then I'll tell you.
I will also know.
Me three.
Guys, I'm back.
Dave's back.
I'm back.
Great.
That means it's time to go around the dial. Sarah.
Speaking of crimes in culture, I want to talk about the summertime crime wave on TV, starting with Cold Justice, which is a nonfiction show. It's on TNT. I think they parked it on Fridays, but it's perfect Friday viewing. It's a cold case show, but in real life. This DA and a CSI hit the road to solve these cold cases. They're making the cases like way more like they just picked more exciting cases, older ones, harder ones to solve. So if you tried a couple of episodes of Cold Justice and then gave up, try it again. It's gotten better. I'd also like to recommend, in particular for Tara, Last Seen Alive, which I wrote up as a new show fact sheet on previously.tv. Mm-hmm. I believe that Tara would enjoy this because she, like me, enjoys judging people on reality TV.
Oh, I do.
Especially the sorts of belip-ringed people who run away from home on this show, leaving their so-called parents to look half-heartedly for them while telling the camera they're pretty sure their children were, quote, kidnapped by the families of their significant others. Like, they just ran off to do meth. And they didn't want to be home by 11:30 or listen to your stupid rules because you're not their real moms or whatever the fuck. Everyone involved is horrible except the PIs. I think you'd be into it.
Okay.
It's on Investigation Discovery. Enjoy or don't. And my last entry for TV Crime Wave, and I'd like to thank our Wheel of Horror correspondent, Allison Lohuff, for this one, is called The Body Farm. It's a spinoff of another British procedural, and it has really
The Body Garden?
Yes, The Body Garden. The head
just
farm.
Just arm here and there. Yeah.
There's this guy who actually, I was so excited to recognize him in our canon episode that we'll be considering shortly. But this actor is like the one sort of spectrum CSI guy that I can stand. And there's one in every show like this now. And the one in Criminal Minds is like Sarah Kryptonite. I can't deal with him or this character generally at all. His name's Augie on the show. He's really good. And the show is like that perfect pitch of like interesting, but also dumb enough that you don't have to pay close attention.
Nice.
So yes, The Body Farm. But that is.
Is it a show about a body farm?
It's set on a body farm. And I, because I'm a ghoul, I sort
can you explain
of wish
what a body farm is for those who might not know?
The actual body farm, which I believe is located in Tennessee, is a research facility. And some people donate their bodies to science, or it's unclaimed bodies, and researchers study how they decompose in various conditions in order to aid with crime solving.
Yes.
And there are a ton of crime novels set at the body farm, but this is the British version. And then it's like the body farm team goes into London and solves cases, which is a little annoying. But then occasionally you get some cool processy stuff on the actual body farm, and it's pretty gross.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lalit, what do you got for us?
So loosely tied into British procedural, but otherwise not having anything to do with anything. I have this obsession with finding out what Netflix is going to kill from live streaming at the end of every month and then watching it. So this month, the thing that I watched was a British crime show called Rosemary and Thyme. It is everything I ever wanted, which is a mystery show about gardening set in England.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
that's awesome.
Sounds extremely soothing. I believe someone actually wrote a Get on Board for us about this show.
That was the other one. That was the two lady crime solvers. It was another R and something.
Right.
Name. The one that Stephanie wrote about?
Yes,
Rosalie
correct.
Isles? Or?
No, it was
oh,
also
a different
British.
Crime lady show.
Yes. Rosalie and British Isles?
It yes. was basically that. But yes, now I can't remember what it's called, but someone will correct me in the forums. Anyway, proceed.
So
are they
I...
solving crimes in gardens or gardening crimes?
Both.
Awesome.
So one of them is an ex. Time is an ex-cop. Rosemary is a, I don't know, botanist, scientist lady who knows stuff about plants. I think they just write her character by have her saying the Latin name for everything, and that's like how you know she's smart. And so they team up and they have this company where they go around and fix up people's gardens for them. But then they always find like a dead body in the garden, and that's where it gets really good. And I'm a big Murder, She Wrote fan, and I've seen every episode like 15 times. And I thought, oh, great, it's Murder, She Wrote, except episodes I haven't seen, and they're British. This will be great.
Composting.
Yeah. It's very healthy, and it's less gory. You know, they just stumble over these bodies, but they're really classy about it, and they have tea. But unfortunately, I think where it fails is it's like the Dana girls to the Murder, She Wrote Nancy Drew. Sometimes it's better to only have one protagonist solving the crime. When you divide it up between the two people, they end up just being kind of a collection of quirks. And each of them is good at different stuff. And then they always have to get separated so there can be hijinks. And then they almost die at the end. And then, like, yay, you clink your teacups and move on. But Jessica Fletcher, like, she could do that all by herself.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Sorry. my entry for Around the Dial this week is Americans Take a Break. This is for the 10% of our audience that is Canadian. I just stumbled across this. It's the Zoodles commercial, guys.
Have you ever gone hunting with the bowl and spoon? Well, you can with Libby Zoodles. Elephants, lions, zebras, giraffes. Zoodles are animal noodles. Come on, tell all your friends. Tell the whole bunch.
I guess I have a hippopotamus for lunch.
Say, have you ever gone hunting with the bowl and spoon? Get hunting with Libby Zoodles.
Hey, kids, now there's new Zoodles in yummy chicken sauce. Zoodles.
Chicken sauce.
I'm sure I never
War
heard the
is
version.
War is about to be declared. What the hell?
So Zoodles are animal noodles. Basically, it's like Elfagetti style.
That won't mean anything to Americans. Oh, it's like spaghetti.
It.
It's SpaghettiOs. Like SpaghettiOs.
It's like SpaghettiOs, except they're in shapes of safari animals, which sends a really mixed message, I think, to kids.
It's like animal crackers,
I think,
but
the message
lame.
Is pretty clear. Kill.
Kill. Kill,
yeah.
Kids, kill. It's a very catchy tune, so, you know.
They ran that ad for 1,000 years.
Years.
Like, from when I was a kid to when my sister was a kid, 8 years later. And the chicken sauce was obviously an addition from her era, because I don't remember that at all. And
what is chicken sauce?
I don't know, but since she will be listening, I feel it incumbent upon me to say, cause she would want me to, Zoodles were not as good as their descendants ironically enough, Dino Getty.
Oh, Dino Getty,
yeah. Which was better.
I liked Alpha Getty to eat, yeah. But Zoodles were the most fun. I mean, conceptually.
I don't know about that.
Conceptually.
They're all disgusting.
They were all disgusting.
That said, if there was a can of them here, I would eat it. We used to get them we would have them for lunch for a long, long time. We'd get them packed in a thermos and eat them cold.
Oh,
we were classy like that.
I like this jingle so much that we used it for our buzzword. We guessed it recently. Is it up yet?
No, it's not up yet.
A future episode of International Waters with Dave Holmes. We are on it, and we had to come up with a chime-in word, so that was ours.
Yeah, it was not my choice.
Yeah.
Good.
Continuing my trend of recommending shows right before they start, Drunk History is, as we record this back tomorrow night, it's on Comedy Central at 10:30 Eastern Time, 7:30 Pacific if you have DirecTV. It's a very funny, it's such a dumb concept, and yet it works so well.
It's really good.
They get people to get really, really drunk and then tell a historical story. Usually they're all set in the same city. In the case of the season premiere, which is tomorrow, it's all in Montgomery, Alabama. And then they have, like, comedic actors perform them according to the version of the story, sometimes not actually very historically accurate. The people that they get are incredible. Jordan Peele is a special standout. I'm going to be writing a post about him to go up right after the episode airs tomorrow night. But, like, even just mouthing along with the words that this other comedian says, he is so funny. I don't know how he does it. He's doing a totally straight face, playing this, you know, a organic chemist who was drummed out of the industry because of racism, because he is black. And if you like things that are silly, you will like Drunk History. I know that some people's conspiracy theory about it is that the people who are telling the stories are not actually as drunk as they act. And I think that they may have known that criticism from the first season, because I will say, especially about the first two episodes of this season, Dave, would you agree? They really seem super duper drunk.
Yeah.
There's the last story in the premiere is about...
There's got to be like a line where the network says, like, they can be drunk, but they have to be like somewhat responsible and say, you know, they can't be blackout drunk or
they're
like
all adults.
Belligerent.
I mean, yeah. Well, some of them were belligerent in season one. But anyway, the last story is about the prize fight between Joe Louis and Max Schmeling, which Morgan Murphy tells. And so they cut from her story to her like putting on actual boxing gloves on herself and Derek Waters, the producers of the show, and like punching him a lot. So basically, this is the dumbest thing that you may see this week, and yet I recommend it anyway. It is no Body Farm.
All right, everybody, here we go. That means it's time for the canon, and the moment everybody has been waiting for is finally here. Officially, we now add a show that you've been saying, how come this show is not in the canon, guys? How come that we haven't heard this show for the canon? Well, here we go. So, Lalit, with no further ado, will you please tell us what you're bringing to the table this week?
Sure. I am bringing in season 3, episode, is it 10 or 11?
11.
Depends on where you look.
Yeah.
Let's go with 11.
Sure, 11's good. Because 311, like the band, who won't remember that? And it is of the new series, and it is Blink. So, the reason that I chose this episode.
From Doctor Who.
So one of the reasons that I chose this episode is Doctor Who's one of those shows that I wanted to watch for years, but it's really intimidating. You know, there's years and years and years of this stuff, and you feel like you're never going to get caught up, and you're never going to figure out the mythology and get in on the inside jokes. So when I decided I was going to watch this show, people kept telling me, just watch Blink and see if you like it. So it kind of works as a standalone episode. There's definitely still mythology stuff in there, but you can kind of watch it on its own. It's actually pretty minimal on the Doctor. I think they were taping another episode at the same time, so Tennant wasn't super available. And I think it really works as a standalone episode. Plus, it has Carey Mulligan as Sally Sparrow, which you will hear in the first clip.
My dearest Sally Sparrow, if my grandson has done as he promises he will, then as you read these words, it has been mere minutes since we last spoke. For you. For me, it has been over 60 years.
So, time travel, that's what the show is about. And in this episode, you get a little bit of mythology, but not too much. And you get introduced to possibly the best villain in the history of the show, the Weeping Angels, who I'm totally afraid of. I saw a little kid walking around in Brooklyn the other day with a Weeping Angel t-shirt on, and I, like, ran screaming in the other direction. I mean, I might have just been afraid of the kid, which is possible.
Or of Brooklyn, based on that story.
Pick a lane. Yeah. You know, it's fine, all of it. He had long hair and a Barbie and his nails painted and lives in Brooklyn, and it was amazing. But I'm still afraid of that t-shirt because of this episode. So there's a little bit of mythology. Let's cut to the second clip and we can hear Tennant say it.
People assume that time is a strict progression of cause to effect, but actually, from a non-linear, non-subjective viewpoint, it's more like a big ball of wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey stuff.
Started well, that sentence.
It got away from me, yeah.
So even though Tennant is in the episode, he appears in a series of pre-recorded videos, which I found out right before coming here today is sort of like how we tape this show. Apparently there's an East Coast half and a West Coast half, and they get spliced together later. Which
and
is
there's
what,
time travel.
And there's time travel. it's like the afternoon over in that place. I don't even know how that's happening right now. So it works the same way. It's got two different timelines. They get kind of mesh together. And this is a season that has maybe my least favorite companion, which would be Martha. The Doctor always has a companion who travels with him. And she's barely in this episode, so I'm pretty psyched about that. But she has a little moment. Let's do the third clip.
Welcome!
Where am I?
1969. Not bad as it goes. You've got the moon landing to look forward to.
Oh, the moon landing's brilliant. We went four times back when we had transport.
Working on it.
How did I get here?
Same way we did. Touch of an angel. Same one, probably, since you ended up in the same year. No. Don't get up. Time travel out of capsule. Nasty. Catch your breath. Don't go swimming for half an hour.
I can't.
Fascinating race, the Weeping Angels. The only psychopaths in the universe to kill you nicely. No mess, no fuss. They just zap you into the past and let you live to death. The rest of your life used up and blown away in the blink of an eye. You die in the past, and in the present they consume the energy of all the days you might have had. All your stolen moments. They're creatures of the abstract. They live off potential energy.
So this episode also gets a little bit meta. It's one of the ones that they're kind of talking to the audience. They know that you have some questions about the show. Maybe if you haven't seen it before, you're like, do these people really say all of this stuff? Am I supposed to take it seriously? So there's a character who kind of functions as the voice of the audience, which is a guy named Larry, who is the romantic interest for Carey Mulligan's character.
This is Augie from The Body Farm.
Oh, okay.
There's a character actually earlier in the episode who's Lilith Kryptonite. He's in the first ever episode of Midsummer Murders, and he plays this super creepy mortician who makes like tea cakes that are shaped like spades and clubs.
Is it the grandson?
Yeah, the grandson. He totally freaks me out.
Oh, doesn't he look like a creepy, thin version of the new James Bond?
I think he looks like a creepy, thin version of Basil Exposition.
That's kind of
the same guy. Yeah.
I just,
it's all in a continuum.
Do you ever have those TV episodes that you watch, like, kind of through your fingers?
Yep.
Every time he's on screen, like, I wasn't scared of the Weeping Angels as much as this dude. I was like, stop looking at me.
Well,
what are you doing?
He has those piercing, like, unnatural eyes like Daniel Craig has.
Yeah, and he's got
and that contributes to it.
And they're sunken, too. Uh-huh. Like, he looks like he's been up for a week and you don't know what he's been doing.
Yeah, and
he serves this important function and then gracefully disappears for the rest of the episode. So the Lawrence character, his last name is Nightingale. So you've got Lawrence Nightingale and Sally Sparrow. And Lawrence is kind of a schlub, and you almost see him naked for a minute in the beginning of the episode. But he ends up being instrumental because he's the one who helps put the pieces together. He's been recording all the clips of the Doctor, finally figures out that the Doctor has been talking to Sally the whole time, and she doesn't know it. I won't spoil it beyond that. But I want to end with, this episode is so iconic for me because it gives you one of the ultimate Doctor Who catchphrases, which is, don't blink. So we'll play the last one.
And I'm sorry. I am very, very sorry. It's up to you now.
What am I supposed to do?
The blue box, it's my time machine. There is a world of time energy in there. They could feast on forever, but the damage they could do could switch off the sun. You have got to send it back to me.
How? How?
That's it, I'm afraid. There's no more from you on the transcript. That's the last I've got. I don't know what stopped you talking, but I can guess. They're coming. The angels are coming for you. But listen, your life could depend on this. Don't blink. Don't even blink. Blink and you're dead. They are fast, faster than you could believe. Don't turn your back. Don't look away. And don't blink.
Do-do-do-do-do.
And those squeaky violin.
Yeah, the only thing that could make this episode better for me is if they let Tennant do his real accent, which is Scottish and super hot. Mm,
yes.
Tis. Mm, broad-churchy.
Mm. Oh, broad-church.
And also Grace Pointy.
Right, now we're going to get to hear his take on an American accent, which is, I don't know why they're doing that, but.
Just have him be the same character. It's so dumb. But he's named Emmett. Anyway, sorry. Continue.
No, I'm always happy to take a break to talk about Broadchurch. Anytime you want to schedule that in. Yeah, so to hit a couple of final notes. I love this one. It's got winks at the audience through the Lawrence character, who's got the angels have the blue box t-shirt, winking to everybody in the audience. Mm-hmm. There's very, very little Martha, which is awesome. And there's a great catchphrase at the end of it, but it also sets up one of the craziest, scariest villains in the history of the show, and they come back, and I think they work.
So. Oh, do they?
Oh, am I ruining the show for you?
No.
There's only like 700 more episodes to get through.
Yeah, no. I'll explain my journey through Doctor Who and Blink in a second. Okay. No, that's interesting. That's
Jeff
good to
wrote
know.
About that in his last marathon diary on Previously on TV.
No. Yeah, and it gave us Carey Mulligan, and how can we say no to that? She's adorable. Yeah.
So this was before she was anybody.
This was like one of her first roles, I think.
Yeah.
It was post Pride and Prejudice.
Pre-education.
Yeah.
Pre the Oscar nomination. And pre that terrible guy she married with the banjo.
With the banjo. I don't even need to know anything else. I don't know who you're talking about,
doesn't matter.
Yeah. Banjo, got it. Speaking if it's of not Brooklyn, it's not Steve Martin.
It's Mumford and Sons. I think just Mumford.
Yeah. Okay, so I have in the past, you probably don't know this, but we did a mini, I don't know, probably 6 months ago-ish, you think?
I don't know.
When they announced that Peter Capaldi was going to be the next Doctor Who, I thought, oh, maybe I really should watch it because I really love him. He's a really good actor. I like him in most things he's in. And so I said, like you said, I said to the... You know, the Doctor Who people in my life. All right, so which episodes can I watch
to give me a
taste of Doctor Who? And the one that always came up was this one, Blink. So, you know, I did watch it, and I reported back, like, wow, this is a really good episode. And I watched another one, which the title escapes me, and it was like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. This is terrible. This is bad in all the ways I thought Doctor Who was bad. Oh, I know which one it was. It was just called Dalek. I think it was from the first season. With the
Oh, yeah, you played a clip of it.
Yeah, that's Canada? Right. Yes.
It's what pronounced is dork. Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry.
Did I just tip my hand on my vote there?
But I really did like this episode then. And everything sums up what this episode is. This episode really, really, really made me want to watch more Doctor Who for all the reasons you said. And then the next week on Doctor Who that follows this episode on Netflix, immediately said, oh, I'm good. Yeah. I think I'm good.
It's like they used up all their awesome in one place.
Yeah. Knowing that this is an atypical episode of Doctor Who kind of helps set your expectations. If you watch this episode and you really do, like me, like it a lot, the fact that it is a Doctor Who, like, you know, it feels like it's 80% something else and 20% Doctor Who. You know, it's a good gateway episode, I'm guessing, but also it could like kind of go all the way around, which is like, oh, I just wanted more of this, but that's not what I'm getting. But, so that was my take on it. But this episode in particular, as I said before, is fantastic. I loved it from start to finish. The production was really good. It was like much better than I expected from Doctor Who. It seemed much more cinematic. I don't know if that's Moffat's contribution to it, because when I watched the first season of the new Doctor Who when it came out, I was like, wow, this is as cheap as I remember the old ones being, and just like in a new way, you know, instead of video light trails, it just seems like it's, you know, it's been shot on a digicam. But I'm really curious to see what Tara and Sarah thought of it.
Well, Sarah, why don't you go first?
All right. Well, let's understate the case rather dramatically by saying that Doctor Who is not something that is meant for me.
Say.
Sarah prefers non-fictional dead people.
Yes.
She likes to know what kind of doctor she's getting.
Well, actually, I prefer my Who's to not have doctorates. Less intimidating that way. You know, of course I'd heard of this episode, but I never watched it. And I was very, like, I was afraid that it was just going to be, like, really overrated as to how scary it is. And I do think that towards the end, they overplayed the visuals a little bit in terms of, like, the teeth. I mean, at first it was really scary, like those cuts when they suddenly would be closer to him. That was scary. That gave me a tingle. And up to that point, I think the writing was very tight, like watertight in terms of how the time works or doesn't work. And despite the fact that, whatever, timey-wimey is a little cutesy-wootsy, which has historically been my issue with Doctor Who, is that it's just a little...
Your issue-wishu?
Yesy-wessy.
Get out!
Yeah, seriously. Go stand on the roof until I call you. But I was captivated by it, and definitely I was tense. Like, something fell in the house, and while I was watching it, and I jumped. Like, I was definitely engaged with it, but you know, the end seemed a little explainy. I think they overplayed their hand a little bit with the teeth and sort of the ending montage of these statues. Like, you're surrounded by statues all the time, which on the one hand, like, statuary is sort of creepy. Like, I live near a huge cemetery, and it is effectively creepy sometimes just by being statuary. But like, we got it. Like, I've been sitting here for 45 minutes. You know, I get it. I get that it's supposed to be creepy. And the music cues I found a little, like, it was just a little, I don't know, it was cutesy. Like, there were twee parts of it that I didn't care for. I think it's a little overrated in terms of showing up consistently on, like, 10 scariest episodes list. But with that said, it was, like, until the last 5 minutes, I'm going to say, I really liked it. It was good storytelling. He obviously took his time, like, figuring out how this was going to work with all the different years that people were going to and how they were going to communicate with Sally Sparrow. I love that kind of, like, people find codes that aren't necessarily even meant for them. Like, I do like that kind of story. So, you know, I still think it's a little overrated, but I was quite pleasantly surprised at the same time. Tara.
First, I just want to clarify my last remark, Ray, drunk history, when I said, it's no body farm. That was not a slam on the body farm. I just meant that sounds really smart and good. Drunk history is idiotic, but I like it also.
Body farm is also idiotic. And sometimes there are people who are drunk.
Just wanted to make that clear. Anyway, this is the only episode of Doctor Who that I've ever seen in its entirety on Dave's recommendation. Some bored Saturday night where he was like, let's just give it a shot and see how you like it. And I did. But it's weird that it's on so many people's list of the best Doctor Who episodes when the Doctor is barely in it. And I think, as we've all said, to the episodes, in the episode's favor. Because wibbly wobbly, timey wimey, like I had the exact same reaction as you, Sarah. Was like, oh, God, just shut up.
And
like,
it was.
I love this actor too. Like, if this were Eccleston, I would have just turned it off. But like, it was to his credit that I sort of could get through that. He can really sell it, but a little was plenty with that.
Well,
and Freema,
it,
I'm with you, Lead. Like, she's a lot.
You know,
sometimes
I didn't
fun,
spend but... as much time wanting to punch her as I did like the whole last season with Rose. I will say.
The timey-wimey thing is twee, but at least it doesn't go to the other end like Star Trek, where they have to explain it and tell you about tachyons and all that kind of stuff.
No, but there's a middle ground. Like,
no,
he could just say it's more like a big blob of stuff
of,
we don't understand.
The perceived
tweeness
of Doctor Who is
it.
Also a reason for a long time that I didn't get close to it either, for sure. So I'm not saying that you're wrong.
But I also liked, as Sarah said, the ways that people find to communicate with Sally, and I thought... Despite the thesis of the episode being that the angels are assassins, I didn't find it that scary either. And I agree about the teeth. It would almost be scarier if they just had flat faces, actually.
Yeah.
Like, if there was just no expression at all when their hands drop. But anyway, that what actually comes across to me is, like, that the idea that you can have a different kind of life and still be happy, even if it's not what you expected, because things kind of work out pretty well for both of those people that get zapped away.
Yeah, true.
Which is good, because it could have really gone to hell.
And I love the line they use.
Or hell.
They make you live to death.
Yeah.
That's a great line.
But it gives the episode a different kind of dimension, where it's like, these are people that pass through Sally's life for a time, and, you know, she has different memories of them than they do of her, and they, you know, they just sort of completely diverged in their paths and with this supernatural intervention. But, you know, it doesn't mean it was a tragedy for them, as much as it is sad for her, you know, I just I liked that aspect of it, that it's just sort of like life can take all kinds of turns and it's okay if it does, even though these angels have big teeth and are trying to kill you, I guess. But not really, but kind of, but not really.
And also, when you get old and see Sally Sparrow again once before you die, you will have a completely different accent.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
I guess he had his 1969 accent. I don't know.
Yes, and married a girl that kind of looked like her, which was a funny touch.
And had the same name as her.
Yes. But yeah, I it's weird to vote it into the canon on the basis of it's completely, from what I can tell, very unlike all the other episodes. But, you know, I'm not going to argue with the people that know better and think it's one of the best, because it's perfectly okay by me.
Sarah?
Yeah, why not?
All right.
I mean, it had me for 40 minutes, reasons. Which is about 88 minutes longer than I thought it was going right. to do. So yes. Go who?
Yeah, and I am going to say yes, too. So that means 3-for-3 on Doctor Who. Doctor Who, Season 3, Episode 11, with an asterisk, Blink. You are hereby inducted into the extra hot great canon.
And they never talked about Doctor Who again.
No, they didn't.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
All right, it's time for winner and loser of the week. Sub-winner of the week is Doctor Who, because I already promised I would watch the Capaldi one, so I will report back. So, Doctor Who fans, you don't have to worry. We will talk about Doctor Who at least once more.
What,
yay!
You will.
Yeah. And do we have to listen?
We will listen.
No. I'll call
it. Speak for yourself. Yeah, seriously.
All right. Winner of the week, please.
Winner of the week is E. coli, because Gordon Ramsay is no longer doing kitchen nightmares. So all of those bacteria will have a chance to thrive in thrifty kitchen, or filthy rather, kitchens across
and
this.
Thrifty, and because thrifty, because they're skipping on cleaning supplies.
In this nation and Britain and probably other markets where he does it as well. So, yeah.
But isn't the winner that crazy lady from Amy's Bakery?
I guess that's true.
She's been the winner. They've sold like a jillion t-shirts from that shit.
Yeah. She'll be fine.
She's
sure
the worst.
Her
with her cat children?
Cat children.
That's like the one good thing about her. Let's leave that alone.
All right, Sarah, who's our loser?
RuPaul, who is guesting on the execrable, is that how you pronounce that? Execrable? Horrible? There you go. Mystery yeah. Girls.
So bad.
I don't really understand how a show whose portrayal of a gay man is this screechy queen trapped in the wreckage when a Lacoste truck careens into Vidal Sassoon level of horrible. Why isn't he picketing instead of guest starring? Maybe he's trying to change things from the inside. I don't know. But I'm disappointed nonetheless.
Yeah. It's a really bad show.
Awful.
Guys. Do you know what time it is? This is game time.
1969.
All right, it is game time. This is the fifth game time of the season. It is a close season so far. Tara, 1 point. Sarah, 1 point. Valued guests, 2 points. 2 points. They're
so elite. You're already in the lead.
Woo!
Congratulations, Lily.
I finally won something.
Today's game time comes from Danielle Johnson, and she earns herself an extra credit. Redeemable for an extra hot great mini topic of her choosing. The title of today's game is Big Screen, Small Screen,
ooh,
and will test your knowledge of TV shows that became movies and movies that became TV shows.
Oh, interesting.
Each clue consists of two actors that played the same character,
oh,
one on TV,
yeah.
One in a movie. The correct answer is the name of the property.
Okay.
No hints. You get 2 points. You can ask for a hint. I'll give you the name of the character.
Okay.
After which the right answer is worth a single point.
Got it.
All right. Does that make sense to everybody?
Yep. Yeah.
Yes.
All right. There are 45 questions, so everybody's going to get 15. And let's see who's going to go first. We now throw it to the person in control, choosing initiative 3000 or picky.
We will start with Tara.
All right. Oh. We'll start with Tara.
Yeah.
And then we'll go to New York. And let's second will be Lilith. And then we'll go to Sarah.
Oh, Sarah.
And third. Yeah. All right. Are we ready to play big screen, small screen?
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, Tara. Here we go.
Okay.
The actors, Ellen Burstyn and Linda Lavin. And sometimes, give me an answer.
Okay. Well, it's Alice was the TV show. Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore was the movie.
Correct. You can give either one. There's a handful that have slightly different titles.
Okay.
But either one will suffice for the correct answer. So
Get
that
it.
Is 2 points for you.
Okay.
All right, Lilith. Alicia Silverstone, Rachel Blanchard?
Blanchard,
yes. Correct?
That would be Cher from Clueless.
Clueless is
nice.
The correct answer, yes. All right. Sarah?
Yep.
Jennifer Grey and Jennifer Aniston.
Jennifer Grey and Jennifer Aniston. Oh, God. Dirty Dancing.
Really? Ferris Bueller Ferris Bueller's
right.
Day Off. Yeah. All right, Sarah. Here we go.
Nope.
Tara?
Me.
Sarah, here we go. Ready? I'm going to pass it to Tara.
Yay!
Are you ready for the passing?
Just go.
Rick Moranis.
Yes.
Peter Scolari.
Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Good for 2 points. Lilith, Sidney Poitier, and Howard Rollins.
In the Heat of the Night.
Good for 2 points. Sarah.
Yes.
Jack Lemmon, Tony Randall.
Odd Couple.
2 points. Back to Tara.
Mm-hmm.
Aline Brennan.
Yep.
And Aline Brennan.
Private Benjamin.
Correct. Lilith. Edward Furlong. Thomas Dekker.
Terminator.
Correct. / Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles. To Sarah.
Yep.
John Candy and Kevin Meaney. John Candy, Kevin Meaney.
Kevin
2 points.
Meaney.
You can ask for a clue.
I would like a clue.
The character they both played is Buck Russell.
Buck.
Uncle Buck, good for 1 point.
Glad I asked.
That series lasted about four
half
episodes.
An episode.
Yeah.
Got canceled for 30 minutes in.
Yep.
Tara.
Yes.
Diane Keaton. Mm-hmm. Kate Jackson.
Hint.
C.J. Wyatt.
Baby Boom.
Good for 1 point.
It's not The Godfather.
It's not Charlie's Angels. Diane Keaton isn't in that.
Let's see here. Question 11. All right. Susan Sarandon, Jo Beth Williams. This is for you, Lily.
Ooh, I think I'm going to need a hint for that one.
Character, Reggie Love. Reggie Love.
I have no idea.
That is The Client. The Client.
Wow.
Yikes.
All right. Sarah?
Jace.
Michelle Pfeiffer, Annie Potts.
Hint.
Luann Johnson.
Oh, I know this one.
Luann Johnson.
Witches of Eastwick.
Is it Dangerous Minds?
It is Dangerous Minds. Yep, it is. All right, everybody's last question before the first score break.
Yep.
Tara?
Mm-hmm.
Debbie Allen.
Fame.
Good for 2 points. John Lithgow, Bruce Davidson. John Lithgow.
Dirty Rotten Scoundrels?
The character was George Henderson from Harry and the Hendersons.
Sure. I really wanted you to guess Garp.
Anyway. All right, Sarah, here's your last one before the score break.
Yep.
Donald Sutherland, Alan Alda.
MASH.
MASH is correct.
Okay, Sarah has 5, Lilith has 6, I have 9.
All right. Close game. We're back to Tara. Sandra Bullock, Brooke Langton.
The net
is correct. Wow.
Yep.
All right.
I read Entertainment Weekly in the 90s.
Number 17.
Closely.
Lily Tomlin, Rita Moreno. Lily Tomlin and Rita Moreno.
I'll take a hint.
All right. Violet Newsted.
9 to 5.
Boom.
I was right the first time. I should have said it.
All right. Sarah, Steve Martin. Ed Begley Jr.
What?
Steve Martin, banjo enthusiast, and Ed Begley Jr.
electric car enthusiast. I will need a hint, please.
Gil Buckman. Gil Buckman.
Oh.
What? Oh, Parenthood?
Correct.
The other one.
Guess that. God damn it.
All right. Michael J. Fox. Mm-hmm. Tyler Posey.
Teen Wolf.
Correct. All right. Anthony Michael Hall. John Mallory Asher.
A John Hughes thing? Mm-hmm. I have no idea. Hint? Sorry.
Do you want a hint?
Sure.
Gary Wallace is the character.
I still have no idea.
The show Weird Science.
Actually, it was not a bad show.
I'm 15. Mm. I don't know.
Melanie Griffith and Sandra Bullock.
Oh. Hint.
Tess McGill.
God, shit. Working girl.
Correct. All right, Tara.
Yep.
Tom Cruise, Josh Lucas.
The Firm.
It is The Firm. Correct.
Jesus.
Tatum O'Neill, Jodie Foster.
Hint, please.
All right. Here's a hint. I don't know why, but Addie Loggins / Addie Prey. I guess there are different character names in the two. They changed the last name.
I have no idea.
Is it Bad News Bears?
It is not. It is Paper Moon.
I would have guessed Little Darlings.
Right. Sure. Yeah.
Mm. All right. Sarah?
Yep.
Julia Stiles, Lindsay Shaw. Julia Stiles and Lindsay Shaw.
Guessing it's not Swim Fan. Hint.
Kate Stratford.
Oh, boy.
That was Erica Christensen, by the way.
Oh.
Oh, sorry. Not Kate. Cat Stratford. Cat Stratford.
Catford. Traffic. Also Erica Christensen.
Hint in the character's name there, I guess. That's 10 Things I Hate About You.
It was a good show.
Never saw it.
I watched it.
All right, Tara.
Yes.
That, in fact, is your real name.
It is.
Liam Neeson.
Very good.
Thank you.
Good job, Dave.
I thought I heard you practicing that earlier.
And Jorge Pepper. No, sorry. George Peppard.
I think you have the... Oh, no, you don't have those in the right wrong order. The A-Team.
There is no right order or wrong order in this. Just,
I know, you're right.
There's only Zool.
All right, Lily. Raul Julia, John Astin.
The Addams Family?
Yes, 2 points. All right, our last question before our second score break, Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
Nicole Kidman, Elizabeth Montgomery.
Why do I know all of yours?
No, it's the other one. It's not the... Oh, damn it.
You know it! You know it!
I don't know it.
I mean, I will when you say it. I know it's not I Dream of Jeannie.
Do you want the character?
It's the other one.
Give her the hint.
Samantha Stevens.
It doesn't help. No. It doesn't. I could tell you a million other things about the show.
Well, tell us about the show.
There were two guys named Dick who played Guy.
Yes!
Yeah. And this character's wife was what?
What do you want from me?
I thought I could talk you through it.
I was going to say Teen Witch, but she was not a teen.
No.
Bewitched. Bewitched.
Fucking hated that show.
The other one. You're right. Sarah has 7. Lilith has 9. I have 12.
All right. Close game. So we're on to Tara.
Yes.
Shelley Long, Florence Henderson.
The Brady Bunch.
Correct. Both Blake Carroll Brady. All right. Harrison Ford, David Janison.
The Fugitive.
Correct.
Nice.
Mel Gibson, James Gardner.
Gardner.
What? Asterisk. I'm going to put an asterisk on this.
Maverick.
Nice.
Why?
That's a deep cut. People barely remember that was a show.
They, in fact, played father and son, I believe, was the reveal in the movie. Yes.
I see.
Same name, different
spoiler.
Character.
Right.
Yes. Spoilers. All right, back to Tara.
Yep.
Steve Carell, mm-hmm. Don Adams.
Get Smart?
Correct. Lilith, Zachary Quinto, Leonard Nimoy.
Spock.
In?
Star Wars. Star Trek.
Yes.
Yes, I said it. It came out.
Yeah, she did.
She broke the internet.
I can't take that ding back. All right. Sarah.
Yep.
Claire Danes, Peggy Lipton.
I told you I know all of hers.
Oh, Christ. The Mod Squad.
Nice.
2 points for that one. Bill Murray, David Doyle.
Charlie's Angels.
Correct. Owen Wilson, David Soul.
The movie had Snoop Dogg in it.
Yes.
Yep, I think it did.
Bewitched 2, come on.
I keep wanting to say Cagney and Lacey, and that's totally not it.
You can get a
really
hint.
You can get a hint.
Yes, that's true, I'll take the hint.
All right. Ken Hutchinson.
Starsky and Hutch.
Nice.
Correct. All right, bringing us... let's see. Here's Sarah. This is going to take us into our penultimate score break here. Dan Aykroyd, Jack Webb.
Oh.
It's Sarah's question.
The guy in the flat top dragnet.
Nice.
Correct for 2 points.
Why am I getting all these old ones? What are you trying to say?
Randomized.
Okay.
I saw the movie. What do you want?
Sarah has 13. Lalit has 14. I have 18.
All right, here we go. Tara.
Yep.
Kevin Costner.
Yep.
Robert Stack. The Stacker. Stack them up.
Is it The Untouchables?
Nice.
Correct.
That's all in history.
That's what I was going to say.
The movie. Colin Farrell. That.
Me too.
Box office dropped dramatically in week 2 as all the... mysteries were solved.
Yes.
Colin Farrell, Don Johnson.
Miami Vice.
Correct. Yep. David Johansen, Joe E. Ross.
Oh.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, I think what?
David Johansen.
Yeah.
Joe E. Ross. Hmm.
Not Joey Tata.
E.
Okay.
Joseph E. Ross.
Can I have a hint, please?
Oh, yeah, sure. Officer Gunther Toddy. No, Toddy. Toddy, maybe.
Do you care to spell it?
T-O-O-D-Y.
There you go.
F Troop.
Yeah. No. Car 54, where are
what?
You?
I'll tell you where it is.
Jesus.
All right, Tara.
Yuck.
Uma Thurman.
Yep.
Diana Rigg.
The Avengers.
Correct. Lalit, Christy Swanson, Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Correct. Sarah.
Yes.
Fucking picky.
Mimi Rogers, June Lockhart.
Oh, sure.
It's old, I'll give you that.
Fucking Texaco Radio Hour. Could I have a hint, please?
Maureen Robinson. They're danger about.
Danger Will Robertson.
Yes.
Oh, Will Robertson. God. And now I can't even remember the stupid. I remember who else was in the movie, too. Wasn't fucking Lacey Chabert in that movie?
Maybe.
Yep.
So. Oh, and
she was.
And one of the Matts from Friends, right?
Oh, yeah.
LeBlanc?
Yes, LeBlanc. Yep.
Yeah. Why can't Sarah, I think this question might be lost on you.
Yeah, it is. Benson.
Are you sure? Lost on you? Lost in space. All right. Tara's last question.
Yep.
Jim Varney.
Yes.
Buddy Ebsen.
The Beverly Hillbillies.
Correct. All right, Lalit, here's your last question. Will Smith, Robert Conrad. Robert Conrad, Will Smith.
Hint, please?
Yeah. James T. West.
6 degrees of separation?
Wild Wild West.
Oh, God, that was a thing, wasn't it?
I thought
it?
We all agreed never to talk about that movie, including in game time.
I would just like to say that I have a trigger warning about giant mechanical spiders.
Okay,
and that was
sorry.
Really not cool.
Sorry.
Okay. Sarah, well, last question. Patrick Swayze, Patrick Cassidy.
The Outsiders.
Characters Johnny Castle from Dirty Dancing.
Again?
Nope.
The last one was Ferris Bueller.
The last one was, you guessed it, but it wasn't. All right, so I think Tar won, but are we ready to play Shits and Giggles?
Sure.
All right, first person to shout out the answer. I will let you know that the movie property name and the TV property name are slightly different for this one.
Okay.
First person to shout it out gets a Dave point. Sean Penn, Dean Cameron. Character's name, Jeff.
Fast Times?
Yep. Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
We actually have the trailer for that TV show up on the previously somewhere. So,
oh, what?
It's horrible.
Good times.
All right, congratulations, Tara.
Thanks.
Tara. Tara.
Good job, Tara.
Thank you.
That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Crate. Rhodes Scholars and Flunkouts alike discussed the past season of The Challenge before we went around the dial with stops at Cold Justice, Last Seen Alive, Body Farm, Rosemary and Thyme, Murder, She Wrote, Zoodles, which are animal noodles, and Drunk History. Weep no more, Doctor Who fans. The Doctor is finally in the canon with Elite's successful pitch of Season 3 Blink. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's Game Time. Remember,
we're listening.
I am, David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
bananas,
Sarah D. Bunting,
it's time for you to earn your stripes,
and Leap Marcus,
rookie.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Crate.
Listen, Goddash, things happening. Four things and a lizard.
Hi, everybody. It's Andy and James here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do fun facts.
Yes, we do. James, give me a fact.
Did you know that there is an extinct bandicoot whose official scientific name is Crash Bandicoot?
Lovely. I didn't know that. Did you know, James, that Upper Egypt is technically below Lower Egypt?
Incredible. Absolutely amazing. I would love to hear more about that.
Well, all you have to do is go and listen to No Such Thing as a Fish.
Where will I find it?
Oh, all over.
Okay, bye.
Bye.